Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Asian Avengers, so weak.
The Asian Avengers, so weak. So fuckable, bro. You know? Whoa. There's five Asian guys together.
Together. Did you ever go through a stealing phase?
Do I think everyone should have a gun? Maybe.
Or you can look me up. I don't care. I'll fight you. I don't care.
You want to get high as fuck? You like opium?
And welcome back to another episode of Asian Not Asian Podcast, the podcast where two Asian guys not from Asia talk about American issues no American cares about. I'm your host, Fumi Abe.
And I'm Mike Nguyen. Hey.
Today is Saturday, February 6th. We're coming at you live from Brooklyn, New York. And we'd like to give a special greeting slash shout out to all of our new Laotian listeners. May I say to you, Sai Bai Di, which is, I looked up on Google. That's how you say hello.
Did you really?
I did. We got a lot of Laotian listeners because we got featured on some Laotian Instagram page with like a shit ton of followers.
That was sweet.
Because one of our fans asked us about, you know, Laotian identity, which I don't know why he asked us about because none of us are Laotian, but we talked about it. And it was a hit, okay? And we got some new Laotian fans. So once again,
we do. Shouts.
Yes. Mike, anything you'd like to say to the Laotian American community?
Yes. You know what? all of us jungly Asians got to stick together.
Oh my God!
And, it's good. You know, there is hope for Fumi because he is Japanese American and he's slowly learning Vietnamese things. So they can be taught. So yeah, it's only a matter of time. But thank you for joining us.
I could also live in the jungle. Yes,
you could also live in the jungle. Just he needs more, you know, sunscreen than normal. But you know, he can hang in there. Yeah, man. Oh, wait, hold on here. So welcome to our new listeners. Great. Mm-hmm. And also, just a quick, announcement for our Patreon.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. If you are a fan, if you like what you're listening to, please support us on patreon.com/AsianNotAsianPod.
Yes, and it's very important you do this. It's very important you do this because usually we just say, hey, check it out on Patreon. But today we're going to just get into it for a second. Okay, I'll tell you why. Because a lot of people think we do this, a lot of you guys think we do this for a living. Okay,
that is false.
You are so wrong. I mean, we do have like an okay amount of people on Patreon. We make some money, enough to buy sandwiches every other weekend. But like, this is not enough money. But we're trying to get to that level. We're trying to get to that Andrew Schultz level. That guy makes $80,000 on Patreon. Come Town makes $50,000 a month on Patreon. Okay? So we're trying to be that. So I know our listeners are not the kind of, you know, people of color who are lawyers and doctors. We know you guys are like the kind of people who are tattoo artists and, you know, blowing glass and shit. I know you don't have a lot of money.
I know you're struggling. There's not a lot of money in glass blowing.
But I don't care. Okay. we need that money. So please go to patreon.com/AsianNotAsianPod for bonus content. And also, if you join now, we're going to do an exclusive hang for our Patreon fans on February 12th. Where we're going to play a bunch of fun games and hang out with you guys on Lunar New Year. So definitely check that out, okay? That's it. That's it for the Patreon announcements. Moving on to... did you want to say something? Did you want to say something to our investors?
No. Just please do it. I don't just have a day job. I have another day job, okay? I am true... You know how like, the children of immigrants don't work as hard as their immigrants do. No. My mom and dad never had a podcast along with their other shit they did, okay? I also have my main shit. I have my side shit. I have comedy and I have a podcast. I have four jobs, okay? My mom was only a nurse.
Jobs,
she was not also a podcaster. You know, Fumi, you know, while you were doing some research on our guest, you kind of fell down into like a little bit of a YouTube hole, buddy.
Yes. Our guest today is so iconic, but I just, when I was researching her, you know, it brought me back to when I was middle school, high school, between 2000 and 2008. Because this is when this person first entered my life. And during that time, I was watching a shit ton of MTV, a lot of VH1, a lot of BET before the school bus. You ever do that? You ever watch the countdown before you catch the school bus? You ever do that, Mike?
No, I was already in college, but continue.
Bro, that was my ritual. You watch the countdown, you watch the music videos before you go to school. And I just remember, like, around that time, I went through, like, a huge emo phase. And on it made me think about it because on TikTok, there's a challenge right now that's, like, trending called the emo phase.
Okay,
where you,
yeah.
Like, you're supposed to be driving, and you say, "Mom, emo's not a phase. It's a lifestyle." And then you, like, sing an emo song, and you have the hair. And I just had this flashback of, like, 2006 Fumi shopping at Hot Topic. purposely not shopping at Hollister, American Eagle, and Abercrombie to make a statement.
Because you're different, okay?
Because I'm different. I'm so unique, and that's why I'm so unique. Molly on my shirt.
That's why I don't park at the Macy's parking lot. I park at the Sears parking lot and go through the Sears.
Bro, I wish you could have seen me. I swear to God, you're not gonna believe me. Like, I didn't have mascara and stuff, but I used to wear bracelets made of safety pins to school.
Oh God.
I swear to God. That's the kind of life I led. And I was like, why does nobody how come I don't have a girlfriend? It's because I was doing that. But I was doing that and just wearing the tightest pants, going to shows, and I don't know if you went through an emo phase. That was a huge thing in my high school. And I would love to hear about your emo phase if you had one, because I actually believe all the music videos I used to watch, there are all these punk rockers from Southern California. So all their music videos would be them playing on Venice Beach. And I used to fantasize about living in California, surfing, skateboarding, and wearing beanies and listening to Fall Out Boy. So I don't know. Did you go through an emo phase? Because that was a big thing for me.
No, but I understand, because for when you were in that time period, I was in college, just after college. And so there was definitely a Mike Nguyen buying a lot of members only jackets phase.
There was
a phase of wearing blazers that had a lot of buttons on the lapels. Fingerless gloves.
fingerless gloves. Yes.
Cowboy Western shirts right underneath the blazer. Yes. So this isn't necessarily emo, but I would say, and this is interesting, because I kind of in some ways feel this was kind of the last gasp of rock and roll.
Yes.
Because, and I don't want to say this because we're, now there's old, but there is no such thing as rock like that anymore. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I truly think, I don't mean this in a mean way, but that was the end of white guy music. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's the last time people really idolized a lot of there are a lot of straight white artists at the time. That whole Vans Warped Tour vibes, that was huge.
Yes.
Huge. And now that's no longer a thing. Nobody talks about it anymore. You know, people talk about emo like they talk about the rotary phone. It's not a thing anymore. It's
that isn't a thing. And I do remember this emo thing was happening, because I was noticing there was a lot more tight jeans than when I was growing up. I was like, what is up with these kids? And I remember that, and this is, this was kind of the last kind of rock gasp, and then the very last thing was kind of the Animal Collective phase, and then there's nothing else after that.
Yeah.
Then everybody became essentially a rapper, a SoundCloud rapper. Everybody's a SoundCloud rapper, and that's it. But yeah, I mean, I think, for me, it was so pervasive that even someone like me, who was I'm mainly a hip-hop guy, hell man, shit man, I'm... You know what? Get me one of those dashboard confessional T-shirts, bro. I'm into it. Come on, kids. Hey, kids. Can we hang out? That's what I was about.
Well, the emo phase was important because it was the way people entered fashion. I don't know if you ever thought about it like that. It's the first time. It's because it allowed men to be maybe I should care about my hair and what color beanie I'm gonna wear, and maybe it's okay to put a little bit of makeup, and maybe it's cool to have a bracelet made of safety pins. It's not weird at all.
Hey man, I was doing the whole thing when Carson Daly had painted nails. I was like, yo, my boy Carson can do it.
Was
I
he really
do
doing
it.
That?
He did it a few times for a few weeks.
That's,
I feel
that's a thing now.
Yes, and so I was like, "This is it. This is it, guys. We're all gonna do it, and it's gonna be super awesome." I was the only one. I was the only one in the whole school.
God damn.
But to get our perspective on this, we want to bring up our guest because we're so excited and we've been talking way too much. So our guest is a journalist, podcaster, writer, documentarian. She was a correspondent on MTV News, covering everything from the MTV Music Video Awards and Movie Awards and the Sundance Film Festival. She's most recently is the host of Add to Cart, along with Kulab Velasak. The podcast is a subversive look at consumerism and all that, and everything that is entwined with that. She's also, and I just found this out, an alum of my school, of Berkeley. Okay. And she started Hester Street Fair, which was something like, man, this, you want to talk about emo, Mike? Man. Man. 2011, Mike? Woo! I was at Hester Street Fair like a motherfucker. All right? Give it up right now for our guest, Suchin Park.
Hey!
Yay! Yay, yay!
Oh, my God, you guys. This emo conversation is giving me vomit chills, you know, but in the best
you
way.
Did you go through an emo phase? Because you had to have been. I saw you. You did not? No. What?
First of all, you were in middle school. I'm even older than Mike. When I was there, you know, it was post, you know, college. I was in my mid-20s. So by that point, you know what I mean? But you know what was interesting about these emo bands? I remember there was a moment I was at the VMAs trying to remember, you know, after a while, you just lose track. You know, I'm not trying to be whatever, but we're on this podcast. You know, I'm with my Asian family, but, you know, one white guy with, like, you know, manic panic hair color spiked up looks exactly like the other manic panic white guy, you know, sure. and you're live. So you're and you're the expert. You know, and you're expected to know who these people are. And they just come in giant packs. But I remember, like, do you remember for a while it was only three name bands? Like,
okay, yes.
Like Jimmy Eat World or
yes.
A Simple Plan.
Yep.
Or
All Time Low, Fall Out Boy.
Fall Out Boy, yep. My Chemical Romance, you know,
yep.
Taking Back Sunday.
Yes.
Like, what's going on? What was the three? That's when the joke for me at work when I was there during this time was like, I can't do three name bands. Like, take me off of this beat. Like, put on John Norris on this beat. Get Gideon. Like, take me off of this beat. I can't keep track of these guys. So,
that's probably
that. Why they moved me to the movie beat. Just,
you know,
off of music.
I don't blame you because, you know, obviously it's offensive when people say all Asian people look and sound alike, but it's not offensive when you talk about emo people because not only do they look alike, they actually, for real, they try to sound alike. Every person sings like, don't take life for granted. You know, like it's got that, like, you know.
This is what, was that like in a Filipino accent? That was
My Filipino romance.
Tagalog.
My Filipino romance. Yes.
My Filipino romance.
Don't take life for granted, girl. I loved it. But it's so weird. It's so amazing to see you here on Zoom, Suchin Park, because I remember I used to see you in my living room before school. And I specifically remember the news segment you and Sway were doing on Kanye West. I swear to God, this is before he blew up. And you guys were like, he's going to be the next big thing. And I was like, whatever, his songs are weird. And then I just went to school.
Whatever. I got to work on my emo bracelet. I don't got time for this.
I got to put more safety pins on
it. I got to put more safety pins on it.
Yeah, whatever, Suchin. Rap sucks.
I'm going to attach it to my shirt. Look at this. I can't move. Yeah, you know, it was a time, it was a strange time. It was, when I was there, it was the time of emo, but it was also the time of, you know, NSYNC and all the, you know, the big boy bands. Yeah. It was the time of TRL. And it was like the last gasp of music on MTV.
Yes.
You know, and I think when I left, you know, I think people were like, oh, do you miss it? And I was like, you know, I don't miss it as much because it doesn't exist anymore. You know? So it's like you almost, like, you left and then, like, the whole, like, show closed down. So it wasn't like you were then watching it go on to have, like, many more years of success. You know, I feel like it was such a specific time that I was there and, you know, and it was great, but it was also not great, you know, but
Well, now I have to ask you what was not great because you just brought that up, but we don't have to talk about that.
Because it was also a job, like in every other sense of the word, you know, it was, it was incredible to say that your job is to do this for a living, but like every other job, I mean, I'm not going to complain about having the incredible luck and opportunity that I had, but you know, I spent probably, As you just said, Mike, there are four jobs. Like, I spent 5% of my day doing the thing I love to do, and the 95% is just like, slogging through the mess of being there. And I think it's just like a weird place to like come into your adulthood, mm-hmm. you know, being on MTV and Asian American and female, all of that. I look back now and I see why I was like so stressed out and like on Xanax the whole time.
You heard it here first. Well, that was because it was 2008 and that was the thing to do. Yeah.
Yeah. And just like coping with it, you know, just like, what am I doing here and trying to figure out.
For sure. Like that's, you know, because at least now if you're on TV, there's almost like a narrative to help you sort of stay sane of like, yes, we know it's hard. You know, yes, we know you're trying to get these stories out there. Maybe nobody's listening, but let's keep trying. But like, yeah, you're one of those, like, I would say you're like an OG Asian entertainer where you guys were doing your thing before like people knew you could even do it. Like,
I mean, you know, for sure.
Like
it was.
Oh, yeah.
When I saw your name on TV, I remember because I was, you know, in middle school maybe, and I moved here when I was 8. And I specifically remember my first reaction was, and I didn't realize how woke this was, but my first reaction was like, oh, it's so cool to see like a foreign name, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your name is, you didn't go by like Rebecca Park or whatever. Yeah. It was like Suchin Park. You know, my full name is Masafumi Abe. I've had a weird complex about it when I was younger. And like, I was like, oh, I don't know, like someone with this name could be on this cool show. With like, I didn't know, you know? So it was, I definitely had that
Nobody
moment.
Nobody knew. I certainly didn't.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
When you were there, I mean, you know, I mean, obviously this podcast is about, you know, identity and I think now America is much more, the mainstream America is more aware of the conversation around identity, even for Asian Americans. So when you were there, was this something that I know you put out some documentaries and you were always trying to get that conversation going. Was that something that was tough to get going at MTV because people weren't paying attention, or was this, or you know, what was it like even just you know, being in that room?
I could spend the entire podcast talking about this, and in a lot of ways, like, I mean, this is just, you know, where I live, you know, all the time, just thinking about this even now. But I think in kind of like to have a more pointed answer to it. So remember when I was doing it, certainly there was nobody else really that looked like me that was doing it. You know, for me, when I grew up, there was an Asian person on MASH, and then like I heard of Connie Chung, and that was it.
Yes,
you know,
that was it.
So I never thought I would make a living doing this. I thought, you know what, I'm going to ride this, whatever it is, for as long as it is, and then I'm going to get my ass back to law school and figure out, you know, a normal job. But I figured like, I'm going to collect these paychecks for as long as I can, you know? So I never even imagined while I was there that my time would even be long, or that I would continue to still be doing this in some form, you know, and make a living. So that was one. Number two, social media didn't exist.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember the day that Twitter, you know, came into being.
Right.
And I remember very distinctly, Britney Spears, I think, had like given birth to her first kid or something, and it was all over Twitter, this app. And I was like, guys, we have to say this on TRL. Like, what are we going to do? But we couldn't verify the source. And so I was just thinking in my mind, I was like, oh, this is the death of news, like in the way that I knew it, broadcasting news, because it's just this, we're just going to be replaced by whatever this thing now is. And this was before social media. So I say those two things because everything I did was in a complete vacuum. Like I didn't, like you said, I didn't have this narrative. I didn't have a community. I didn't even have like 10 followers to tell me like, oh, I love when you talk about Asian stuff. I didn't even know if Asian stuff was cool to talk. You know what I mean? I was just kind of like figuring it out as I went along. And mind you, you know, I'm 20 something, you know what I mean? Like still
you're listening to emo
out,
music, you know? Yeah, it's tough.
Making safety pin bracelets, you know? Still trying to figure out
man.
You know, all of that. And I grew up in the Bay Area where there was a lot of Asian people. And so in some weird way, moving to New York, it was like I never thought about being Asian because it was always around me. So I always called myself like a born again Korean or a born again Asian.
I love
where
that.
Like you find yourself and then suddenly you're like, all your friends are Asian.
Everybody's Asian.
Only talk about Asian
we're going to K-Town all the time.
I never had that. You know, when you go to Berkeley and you grow up, you know, in Oakland, you're just like, that's just, you know, that's the temperature of the water. So all of that was happening, and I don't even think I had a consciousness about my Asian identity. Mm-hmm. I knew that it was a big deal to some degree that there was an Asian person on, but just even looking back outside of myself, I don't think I really even understood that. And I did a documentary series, like you said, it was mm-hmm. called My Life Translated. And one of the things about MTV, you know, you guys remember Diary. Do you remember Diary?
Yes.
So that was, you know, now, you know, when you think about YouTube and all of this stuff and people vlogging or like doing like, you know, hour one, 24 hours with, you know, nobody was doing that. You didn't do that in news. You know, we sort of like, that was how we presented news. And so for me, I was like, well, I can't do a documentary about these kids without then turning the camera on myself. Like that felt like the way that I could talk mm-hmm. to this generation. Like I can't just be out there being like, hey, Asian person, you know, I had to really figure out. So I did that series. And I remember I did one, my first episode was on whether I could have a boyfriend. And I had been, and still for many years afterwards, lying to my parents about living with various boyfriends.
They know you're married now, right? Okay.
Yeah. Yes. But you know what I mean? And I did a show about it, and he was on it. And so.
And when was this? This was what year?
I don't remember what year it was. It was like 2000. I don't know. I want to say
this is MTV
Dive.
MTV Diary debuted February 16th, 2000.
So it was after that. So anyway, so that happened, and I think that experience was really formative for me. One, I like stopped doing the series completely. I was like, this is freaking me out. I am not ready for this. Like, I'm not ready to examine my identity. I'm not ready to share this personal side with the world. Like, I'm okay with cue cards and like mm-hmm. asking questions, but I'm not okay with, and I remember there was an interview with my mom at her house, and I, that's something I remember. I was like, well, mom, I mean, I'm, you know, a grown person now, like, I think I should be allowed to date. And I remember even looking back at that in the edit room, my voice was like eight octaves higher. Like I was a high school student.
I'm
like
getting nervous. Yeah, for sure.
Like I was like, mom, you know,
is it cool?
You know,
so
like,
can start
I wasn't a journalist. I wasn't someone. I was like a Korean daughter with my mother being like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I hope you're not going to go there and I will bust this camera. You know what I mean? So like all of these fears. And so there was that. And I just wanted to say that. And then there was the moment when, do you remember Better Luck Tomorrow came out with Justin?
Oh my God. Yes. Yes.
And it was the first time I sat in a theater ever. And I had seen Asian faces, complete Asian cast in a movie context. And it shook me to my core. Right. Like, I was like, I never even knew I was missing this experience.
Yes.
So those two things really kind of started to give me a sense of like, I don't think journalism in the traditional sense is what I want to do. Because I always thought I wanted to sit in Diane Sawyer's seat.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. read the news. Like, I would go from MTV. I would go to network news. I would work my way up the ladder and I would be on your evening news. Like, that's what I thought I wanted. Mm-hmm. But it was those two experiences that realized for me, like, this question of Asian American identity, this question of storytelling in this way, all of that, like, it's messy and there's no clear path. But that was what was inspiring and exciting to me. Yeah. So it's kind of like why I'm still here, still talking about it at 45, you know?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting because, you know, I remember watching you on TV, and this is at the time when if you were an Asian person on TV, I had a crush on you. Okay, that was just how it was. I saw Connie Chung and I was like, oh, like, total fox, babe. All right, Soo Chin Park, hell yeah, my dude. Okay, you know, so... But it's interesting because you, at the time, it's like we had a very, there was like a form of diversity, I feel, where it was like what I would call collectible diversity, where it was like, we have one Asian person.
Yeah.
We got one black woman. We have one black man, you know, and you never got too deep into anyone's personality. You never got to understand all these things. And I think now, to your point, social media is all about like, let me tell you everything about everything all the time. Yeah. Do you feel like, you know, if you could go back and do, you know, maybe that documentary series again or that episode again, do you think you might handle it a little differently now that you know, what you know now and where you want to go now?
I mean, it's not even a absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, for me, when I was doing that documentary, when I was at MTV, all of that time, I was processing myself as I was having it, you know, the work. So for me, I've now processed so much of it that to do this work, I do it with authority. I do it with confidence. I do it with knowing that I'm serving something much bigger. I had no sense of that when I was there doing it. So really, it felt really scary and it felt very alone. And I, you know, my producers weren't Asian. Like, I didn't have anyone to tell me, like, should I be talking about double eyelid surgery? I mean, I don't know. Like, is it good? Is it bad? I know. I don't, like, what's the right thing to say? You know, I remember when, and I tell this story, and I remember one of the episodes that I did for this documentary series was on eyelid surgery.
Yes.
And this one had gotten a lot of, this particular episode had gotten a lot of press, and Oprah Winfrey, I mean, the Holy Grail, she invited me to talk about this episode and about this procedure. And Asian people, when you talk about double eyelid surgery,
oh my gosh.
It's like, I went to go get ramen, I, you know, stubbed my toe, I got double eyelid surgery. Like, what else? Yeah. What else, you know? Paper or plastic. So I remember sitting there on that stage, and it's so surreal to be there. I mean, it's just like, out of body experience. Like, I'm just like, just get through this and like never relive this moment again. And I remember her sitting across from her, and she's just sitting there, you know, she's got this big Oprah, you know, and she's like, really? This is really? Yeah. And I questioned myself as I was saying, I was like, holy shit. What if I'm the only one obsessed with double eyelid surgery?
Yo.
Because she's looking at me so incredible.
Yes.
Like, just this?
This is no way.
And
this
I'm like, impossible. Yes, it's the most popular surgery in, you know, Asia and da 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 da. And I looked out into the audience, and that episode was something about like she was doing a big campaign about body image or something. And so they had bussed in a whole bunch of high school girls from all over the country that had won the seats in the audience. There was one Asian girl in the audience whose head was like bobbing. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like on a dashboard. Yeah, yeah. And because she was like, and that 16-year-old girl saved my life on the Oprah Winfrey stage because it was only through her reflecting my truth and my experience, validating me, that I was able to like come out of that and then continue, because there was genuinely a moment where I was like, let me back off of this because I don't actually know if what I'm saying is true. And so I think about that moment all the time, which is very kind of symbolic of like that time for me when we're talking about Asian identity. It's like, I never saw that Asian girl out in the audience being like, yes, yes, more, or do this. You know what I mean? It was just me. So that's a long-winded way of saying that I would approach it differently as I do now, as I do this podcast, as I do anything, as I do my own podcast, where every week somehow, even though we're talking about face serums and what we're buying, it comes back to my Asian experience, my immigrant experience, and then specifically as an Asian woman, what my experience is in this world. So,
That girl was like, she was like a human version of like a Twitter, like, you know,
right? Exactly. One thumb up, you know.
You said something.
That's all I needed.
One
it's
thumb.
Like, but it's crazy because you said this earlier. You said doing entertainment back in the 2000s was like doing it in a vacuum, and I never thought of it that way. But like, if Mike and I didn't have social media, like we could never make it. We could never get this many fans because. You're right. Like we shit on social media because a lot of people are stupid on the internet and they say mean things.
Yeah.
But you forget the value of that like, you know, especially when you're talking about something more vulnerable or something that you think.
That's right.
You're like, well, does anybody care about what I think about this? You know, what was it like growing up in Ohio as an Asian person? Like, does anybody care? But you get those likes and you're like, oh, maybe people do care. But like
to do that without any feedback is like some psychotic social experiment. That's fucking, it's really crazy.
I was that 16-year-old girl, so thank you very much. That was amazing. And yeah, I mean, I think, you know, to your point, Fumi, without having all those things, you know, it's hard to pitch a show about, you know, because I'm actually surprised you even got that through. Because if you were to come up to me, if I was a white guy, and you'd be like, hey, we're gonna do this thing about double eyelid surgery, 100% that sounds made up. 100% you just made that up. That's, oh no, dude, everybody in Asia gets this double eyelid surgery. Oh, you don't know about it, idiot. You know, like, you're playing, it sounds like a joke, but it's not a joke, you know? And what thing, you know, is that that's interesting is, like, you know, you do seem to have a lot of different interests. I mean, I wanted to talk about your current podcast. It's called Add to Cart. Yeah. And it's like a not finance podcast, but it's like about consumerism and stuff like that. You used to also have another podcast called financial advice podcast called Open Accounts.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, like, is there something, you know, that's about consumerism or capitalism? What is sort of driving that?
Oh, I mean, I'm an immigrant. I'm obsessed with money. You know what I mean?
Dude.
Like, my religion is money. My culture is money. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, like, to me, it's like, I don't know how to separate my Asian-ness from my immigrantness. You know,
yes.
I would say that other than my gender, you know, I would say number two is the immigrant experience.
Right.
And so I think money is a really, really fascinating topic for me. And it's also a very intimate topic and mm-hmm. allows me to have conversations with people and my audience in a way that you can't escape it. So, like, in our podcast, you know, Add to Cart, which is, you know, the tagline is, you know, all the things we buy and buy into and what they say about who we are. Like, you can give me the tagline of who, you know, Mike and Fumi are, and you guys have your spiel, I'm sure, and a glossy press release, but if you gave me your credit card statement,
oh god,
oh shit,
oh no. You're gonna see the weird gift I got Fumi once. You'll have to look back.
When it says OnlyFans, that's it's incorrect.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Actually, it's just what my local deli calls itself. Uh-huh. So don't even worry
about
that. Sure.
Yeah, that's some personal shit right there.
We're big fans of the podcast, and I think what you just said is a very potent thing. And you know, we wanted to just real quick go around and say what is really in our Amazon carts. What's in our online shopping thing?
I'm fired up right now.
I'll fire it up right now. Hold on.
Look at all of us.
I think maybe just three, or, you know, if it's not in your cart, maybe your last three purchases, I think, would also suffice to tell you who you are. Let me log on to my Amazon.
And before we get into it, I did want to ask, because you did hit on something, because I feel like immigrants were obsessed with money, but then also I didn't learn about money from my parents, you know?
They don't teach you how to invest in shit.
They don't know that.
They don't know how to invest in shit. Yeah. They don't know. Yeah. That doesn't exist in Vietnam. Yeah. What are you going to invest in?
Like,
you know?
They just like tell you like where to hide it in the house.
Yeah. Exactly. Dude, I told you, my mom used to keep gold bullion, right? She used to keep gold in the bank because she was like, yo, I don't trust any of this shit.
Dummy.
Exactly.
She's no dummy. She's been
because
through war, famine, like, no.
You need the gold, okay? I can't be going up. You know, when the bombs are falling, you know, no one's going to be taking GameStop, okay? Give me some gold, all right? That's what I need. What do you think it is about, you know, the immigrant experience, and, like, what did you learn from your parents about money? You mean, maybe not directly, but, like, sort of indirectly.
I mean, you know, I think it's more about what I didn't learn about money, you said, than what I did learn about money. So I think that whole, you know, when you talk about money, at least from the immigrant experience, because I don't know what it's like to have money, and I don't know what it's like to have money as a white person, and, you know, so from the immigrant experience and to have money, is that, like, it defines how you move in this world, it defines how people see you, and it defines, I think, ultimately, it can define your self-worth. So let's even think about, as we're joking about this, you know, how my parents never had a checking account. Well,
no shit, yeah.
Why didn't they have a checking account? It's because walking into a bank, not speaking the language, signing a long document, you know, and being potentially ridiculed or cheated, out of something and not knowing that, why would anyone subject themselves to that experience?
Damn, so true.
And so I think that, yes, it's about money, but it's also about the way that our parents, you know, moved in this world and how much they were limited and how little of the world that they could access. And so, you know, in Korean culture, we have something called kaetdon. And I don't know if that's something I think a lot of Asian cultures have. But like when you move into this country, a lot of times what you'll do is you'll come into it mostly a church community of other Koreans, and the other Korean business owners would all pool their money. And once a month, one person in that group would get that pot. Right, to then start a business, which is why there's so many Korean small businesses and that sort of thing. And so you work with on the outside of the system, and you're always on the outside of the system trying to make it work. So like even in that example, there's just so much I do and don't know about money, you know, that that there are other ways of finding your path. But at the same time, you know, I live and want to raise my kids successfully in you know, with financial stability, learning all of these things. Like I have squirrely, weird fucking things I do with my money because I just don't know. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah,
I
yeah.
hide money in different pockets. I don't know where things are. I use different credit cards. I never have a balance, like a balance. Like I'm just like, what does debt mean? All of that freaks me out. So I'm still unlearning that.
That's like a very distinct, and I think for a lot of Asian Americans, like, you know, that doesn't really matter what group you're in, that's a moment you have as an adult. And it's kind of embarrassing because when you have this realization, you feel like you're old enough. Like I remember when I was like 24 or 25, like I'm pretty good at saving, but I learned that saving is bad. This girl at work was like 21 and she's like, oh, you can't just keep your money in your savings account. You're losing money. And I was like, what? Like, what do you mean I'm losing money? They're like, yeah, like every year you're losing money because the value of your dollar goes down. And I was like, I didn't know that. And then so then I looked into like these investment things or whatever. But this girl was just walking around the world like
she's, knowing that.
You know, she said that to me as if she was describing like how a chair works. You know, it's like it's so obvious to that. And yeah, that moment I was like, I just remember being like so embarrassed not having this kind of knowledge just because like that's not something my parents said or whatever, you know.
Well, I feel like, you know, our parents would, for us it's like saving, you know, and to your point, Soo-Chin, it's like you can't trust institutions, you know. We would never put our money in the bank, you know. We would keep it in the house because that's where I also keep my gun, you know, because people will come for us, you know?
Yeah.
So I think I've heard about this Korean kind of pooling of money, and I really wish we could do that as like millennials. You know, if we imagine if all of us pulled our money and then once a month, one of us got a PlayStation, that'd be sweet as hell, dude. And I think we should all do that. Yeah. All right.
Of course, we're not going to talk about all the times that person just took off with the money. But,
oh,
you know,
my
whatever.
God.
That's,
yes.
That's fine.
Yes. Yo, that's for another episode. Okay, so we're going to play this game inspired by Soo-Chin's podcast called Add to Cart, which you should check out, where we're going to talk about what's in our various shopping carts. I guess we're all turning on our Amazon ones because, you know, all hail Jeff Bezos. But who wants to start? What kind of fun stuff you got in there, Fumi? You want to start, Fumi?
Well, I don't really do carts. I don't really do cart stuff. Like I don't add. Is that you talking about the wish list? Like I don't really add stuff.
That's fine.
If it's in the cart, I buy it. So I'm just looking at my last three orders, and I think this really says a lot about who I am. Okay, the last three things I bought on Amazon, it was it's Lube Life. It's water based personal lubricant.
Okay.
Kikkoman soy sauce dispenser.
Okay, don't get those mixed up. Okay.
And then a stapler. And I think that's a really beautiful way to summarize my life.
Let me just say this. The stapler is the weirdest thing. Okay, who's using a stapler? What year is this?
It's tax season, baby. It's
weirdo,
tax season.
Okay? A stapler? God, I'm going to kink shame you. God.
I mean, it really is the full spectrum of Fumi that we got there in your cart. And I'm glad to hear that you are self-caring. I'm glad to hear that you are... that you are feeding yourself well, and I'm so glad to hear that your taxes are in order.
I think I'm sorry if I confused you. I'm actually fucking the stapler. I don't know if I was clear. So sorry.
Got it. Now it's really clear.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see here. Okay, for me, mine are really lame. I have a TheraBand. You know what TheraBands are?
No.
TheraBand. Is it like a stretching thing?
It's like a stretching band, like it's like a rehabilitation band.
Yeah.
I have one of those. That's just in my cart, and I'm not sure if I should get it, and I don't know why I don't buy it, because I live in pain because of my back, but I still, I'm like, I think I can find a better deal that whole time.
How much is it?
$39. Maybe I can just push through. 39? It's $39.
Damn.
Yeah, see?
that's a weird price.
It's a weird price. You know, if it was a little bit less or a little bit more, maybe I'd be into that. Yeah. Otherwise, let's see. I have a lot of like camera equipment. I have so much gear. Fumi knows that I love gear.
Yeah, we love gear now.
I have a lot of gear.
Wait, audio gear or just like gear?
What specifically?
Like I mean, the latest thing is I have a case for my camera. I have a lot of camera equipment.
Yeah, but how much is that?
That's only like $20. Mm. That's not so bad.
Yeah, you know, and it's like, who gives a fuck about your back? So that's fine.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Is like, you know what? My back can take another one, okay, for the team, because I need this camera gear.
Yeah, but
baby.
My camera, it cannot be scratched. But my back?
No, hell no, dude. How dare you say that? Shh. All right, Suchin, how about you?
I'm trying to think. I mean, they're all pretty. You know, this is add to cart. Is that like, what do the things that we buy or don't buy? How we buy it? Like Fumi, the fact that you don't have. That you buy everything in your cart, like you're a different species than I am.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, you and I do not share one strand of DNA.
No way.
I don't know what color your blood is. I don't know if you eat with your mouth or another hole. I don't know.
I don't understand. Like, you guys just, please, you're telling me you two both just browse on Amazon, like you're walking around the grocery, and you just put it in there. Why would you put it in there? Like, you just, but it's online. You put it in there so you can look at the link again?
Sometimes I go all the way through up to the purchase payment thing. All up to
cancel.
It. Right up to it.
Wait. Have you ever, how about this one? I'll get something and I'll just start the return process before I've even opened
no!
it.
No!
Yo! Holy shit. Oh my gosh. You are a true master.
You never know.
Yo.
You don't have to return it. It doesn't cost you anything. But now you've removed a step.
Okay, yes. Yes.
So if you want, you get the TheraBand. You start the return process before you open the box. Okay. So you know, this is just a trial. You don't know. And if I love it, I'll keep it. And if not, it goes right back in the box. So that's, Mike and I are
wow.
Wait,
we bleed the same color.
I love this. I love this so much. One, shout out to Commitment Issues. That's cool. Two, I want this to be the new Asian American way of asking people's zodiac signs. Like, instead of being like, are you a Scorpio? You should just ask how you shop. That is way more telling of like, what kind of lover are you gonna be?
Are you an add to cart guy or
because from what I can tell from Mike, if he goes that far and pulls out, bro, that's edging. Mike is into some weird. That's capitalism edging.
Yeah, man, that's me. I just see how close can I get without going over. Okay, that's me.
Wait, Fumi called it. Like, I mean, listen, Mike, we don't need to talk about it here, but. I mean, talk about commitment issues. You know what I mean? I don't know how deep we have to get. I am married, but
she's got the receipt for the ring.
Choice. You know what I mean? Like, both of us came to the table like, all right,
let's just see. All right, I already got the divorce proceedings going. Okay,
yes, exactly.
I already hired a lawyer.
Yeah, the lawyer's there.
Let's write our divorce papers now. Let's just make sure.
I'm already going to move out.
Sure, I'm already.
All right, Suchi, what do you got? What do you have that's already starting to return?
I've got so... My thing, too, is at this point, like, I don't even know what... I have so many... At any point, I'll have six, like, return labels pre-printed out. And so I have to then go through and put post-its on, like, what it is. Because you don't know what it... You have to... Sometimes they tell you on the return... But you don't know which box it is. So...
That's hilarious.
I got a whole system. I mean, I could turn the camera. I got this thing going here. So, I have no shame. Especially on Amazon. Please
stop.
Dude.
Forget
Cry me a river. Like, don't do that. Don't do that.
And people say, yeah, Asian Americans, yeah, we don't have any mental health problems. What are you talking about? You know, we just live our lives with 6 or 7 return labels all over the house and shit.
Yeah, that's a red flag, man. But I love it.
I don't know. I call that really understanding, you know, my worth, which is that I can return anything I want anytime I want.
You should tell a man that. Like, hey, I can return you anytime I want. You don't think that I don't have the return label ready? Love it.
Yeah. Mine is, and y'all may not be able to relate because you're young, and that's fine. But when you reach a certain age, and you come from a family where dental insurance, like, what is that? You know? Mm-hmm. And you start to get into your 40s and your teeth fall out. You know, they're just falling out. You're just like eating. You're like, oh, chiclet.
What the fuck?
Teeth falling out. Okay. So I am very obsessed with oral health care.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
There we go. Staplers. Yep. Mm-hmm.
No. Come back into the light. Okay. Right. So I've become obsessed. You guys, add to cart. I actually talked about this once. And I ordered a new pack. The Oral-B Pro Health All-in-One Soft Toothbrushes, coming tomorrow by 9 p.m.
Nice.
Listen, I spend a lot of money. I'm cheap. I scrimp and I save, but when it comes to my teeth, that's when I pull out.
There you go.
You know what I mean? The heavy credit card. The credit card that is made from like the metal stock.
Yes. Wait, is this the shout out to the Chase Sapphire card. Is this the electric?
No. This is just a manual toothbrush. Let's keep it chill. It's early. It's a manual toothbrush. We call it a quickie. You know,
okay,
this is like an afternoon delight. Okay. You don't want to power up in the middle of the day like a freak. You just want to have a little,
something. You know, maybe in a public bathroom. Why not? You know,
You care about dental hygiene or oral hygiene, but you're stingy, so you won't buy an electric toothbrush. But you'll
I have an electric toothbrush, honey. I have the gold standard. I have that. That's for nighttime. Okay, this is what I'm talking about. Daytime. I'm talking about in a bathroom, in the car. I don't know, at a Whole Foods bathroom. I don't know. I don't care where you brush your teeth. Okay, this is a lightweight. Okay, this was recommended to me by my Japanese periodontist, a lovely man who only recommends the best. So I only put that out there. This is a toothbrush like none other. It has the silicone side bristles. I'm sure it takes about 80,000 gallons of petroleum and 70 blue whales have died to make this disgusting toothbrush. Right. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
That is how good this manual toothbrush is. And so I just re-upped on that because I noticed that I was running low and that makes me nervous. Okay. I like to have a lot of these on hand just in case I feel like I want to switch up my toothbrush.
That is a very Asian move, I feel, of like, you know, we don't know how money works and we don't know anything about savings, but we have mad toothbrush. Like, there's always that one thing your parents are okay with, like, having a shit ton of. Like, they won't buy you new shoes every year, but they'll just be like, yo, you need tangerines, okay? And I got some for you, my dude, okay?
It's that's like, so true.
Stop with the tangerines.
Hello, Tushy. The future of toileting has arrived. Okay, it's technically been around for centuries, but hideously expensive, costing thousands.
Now the brand new Hello Tushy 3.0 modern bidet attachment is here to level the playing field. It's stylish, eco-friendly, easy to install, and affordable.
Hello Tushy 3.0 doesn't just cleanse your butt with a precise stream of fresh water. It cleans itself before and after it's used with the Smart Spray automatic self-cleaning nozzle.
It attaches to your existing toilet, requires no electricity or additional plumbing, and cuts toilet paper use by 80%. So the Hello Tushy bidet pays for itself in a few months.
Shout out to the people who were part of that study. Because with Hello Tushy, you don't wipe at all. Just poop, spray, dry, and go.
And sanitation is so simple. The Schmutz Shield offers easy cleaning, and the knobs are naturally antimicrobial. It is trademarked. The Schmutz Shield is trademarked.
No way that's real.
The Schmutz Shield is a trademark thing.
Plus, every Hello Tushy Bidet attachment comes with a 60-day risk-free guarantee and a 12-month warranty.
Already got a tush on your pot? Upgrade to the new 3.0 model. If you're new to the revolution, join millions of Hello Tushy customers right now and have a clean butt with every flush. It's true, buddy. Go to hellotushy.com/ANA to get 10% off plus free shipping.
This is a special offer for listeners. Go to hellotushy.com/ANA for 10% off.
hellotushy.com/ANA.
And we're back with everybody's new favorite segment. It is Mismanagement Consulting. But before we get to it, just wanted to get your attention real quick. If you are listening this far, which according to our Spotify stats, more than 70% of you are still here, and you're enjoying what you're hearing, the stories about the toothbrush and me fucking the stapler, which I'll tell you how to do on Patreon. So definitely subscribe to Patreon. But if you want to hear more, the rest of the podcast, please share this. Okay, this is how we get new listeners, by word of mouth. So please take a screenshot of this if you're listening to this on your iPhone or Android or whatever, and post it on Instagram and tag us at Asian.AsianPod and put a little cute gif in there and tell us what you liked about this episode, all right? This is the way we get new fans, and we love hearing from you. And if you do it and you tag us, we will retweet your or like regram your thing on our story, and then that's your 15 minutes of fame, because we have 12,000 followers, okay? And I'm going to go ahead and say that, like, that's a lot. That's a lot for me. And that, so we're unverified, but that's the way we roll. Okay,
that's right.
Like, we don't got checking accounts. We're unverified. We don't give a shit. Okay, mm-hmm. We put our followers under the mattress, and it's fine. They're all there.
So, we keep them close.
We keep them close. So please share this on your social media. We would love that. Okay, back to mismanagement consulting. So this is a segment where Mike and I, we solve our fans' problems. So we put a feeler out there. People submit questions, and it's an unofficial consulting segment. Okay, we are not consultants, but Mike and I are corporate agents. We kind of know what we're talking about. We're corporate agents. You know, we work in marketing. We can help you out. So we solve your problems in a very, very stupid way. And I feel like I gotta say that now, because Mike, we've posted this on Instagram a handful of times, and this segment always does well, but people like get really mad because they're like, that's not what you should do. You should do this. As if the segment wasn't called Mismanagement Consulting. We're like, it's a joke. The whole thing is a joke.
The whole thing is a joke. Second.
Like, first, don't like, understand like, humor. What?
No, they don't.
No. Upset, Fumi. Like, why?
One time this guy was like, my coworker smells. What should I do? And we thought of like a funny solution. And they're like, no, guys, you got to go to HR. I'm like, what? What do you think we're gonna just post that? You think Mike and I be like, you should go to HR? Thanks for listening. Like what are you fucking talking about? Like, this is all for entertainment.
I'm having sex with my stapler. Like,
yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
you're taking advice from that guy.
If you want to get in on this, please text us or leave us a voicemail at 917-755-9596, or you can email us at asian.asianpod@gmail.com. But we prefer voicemail. Okay, so please just call us at 917-765-9596. Okay, today's question, I thought I wanted to pick this because I feel like it's very relevant to our guest's life. Suchin, I believe you are married, and
yes,
you have children.
Yes.
How old are they, by the way?
6 and 8.
This is perfect. This is, okay, so I'm have a fan from, your husband is not Asian, correct?
Correct.
Right.
Thanks for
no, it's okay.
Letting everybody know that. Okay.
No. But it's very pertinent to this question. Okay, so we have we have a fan, and I don't want to say this person's name, but let's just call her Mrs. C. Okay,
yes.
Miss C.
Okay.
She says, our fan says, I have a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old with my husband. My husband is Taiwanese, and I'm from Ohio/white. We already knew that. You didn't have to put a qualifier there. Here's the situation. I recently bought a children's book about race, identity, and racism for me to read with my 5-year-old, and while it was great to discuss the racism that black and brown people face, as with most material, I found it really totally insufficient to discuss what it actually means to identify as an Asian/Chinese/white/American. I had recently read that it's not a good idea to teach a mixed person to identify as half, because it makes the person feel diminished and they don't belong in either group. So anyway, my head hurts now, and I'm just trying to figure out the best way to support my kid and also help give him language to identify racism and identify. But it's so complicated. Are there books like this for kids of Asian descent? It's one thing to buy a book about like the Lunar New Year, but it's very difficult to find material and help that helps break down more serious subjects like model minority. And I just keep reading that I'm supposed to start doing this as young as possible. What should I do, Miss C? Wow. This is a deep ass question.
This is a good question. I have my mismanagement consulting advice ready.
Yeah.
But I want to. Okay. I want to hear from our guest, because
yes.
You know, you I don't know if you've gone through like thoughts like this. How do you kind of raise your kids and all these things? And you know, I know you're going to the post office a lot to return packages, but you probably are also raising your children. You know, I mean, what do you
picks up, but whatever.
Yeah.
gosh, I mean, it is such a, first of all, Missy, power to you, lady, of not being of color and being so concerned with it. I think a lot of times we, you know, we're not as concerned with it because we live it, eat it, and breathe it. So we don't have to like teach it. You know what I mean? It's just in the way that I move in the world and how I process things and that sort of thing. So, for example, you know, I remember my parents don't speak English. And so when they do, it's very, very accented. And my son, in trying to speak English, because he doesn't speak Korean, was speaking English with an accent.
Oh, shit.
Because he thought that that's how my dad would understand it. There was no, I think, thought to race or what that is. And so we got into a really big conversation, and it was very, there was no agenda to that conversation for me other than trying to understand what he was saying and then to sort of explain to him like, okay, so I understand what you're saying and what you're doing and that does, but let me give you another side to it. You know, there's a lot of people, like when I grew up, you know, everybody, when they saw me, they'd be like, oh, look it, it's Suck and Pack. It's Suno's Pack.
Suck and Pack.
You know?
Oh, my God.
God damn.
You know, they would speak to me with an accent, making fun of me. And so anyway, so we had this whole thing, and I think he kind of got it. And for me, it wasn't like a, you know, like a PBS, like, teachable moment. It was just like, that's every day, right? Like,
right.
Trying to teach your kids right and wrong, trying to let them think for themselves, right? Try to figure, because they're going to get themselves into situations that there's no book for, that you haven't thought about before. So if you give them the tools of empathy and compassion and, you know, a sense of like, okay, maybe I'm not the right person in the room, that goes a long way. So that's a little bit esoteric. This is a really tough one. I don't know what the studies say about teaching kids that young about race. I just know from me and my experience, my kids are 6 and 8. They have no idea what race is. They don't mm-hmm. understand it. So I've been a little bit more like encouraging them to live in this space more, you know, where it's like, I sometimes feel like calling a problem or a challenge out that they don't see as a challenge at this age mm-hmm. can create more confusion.
Oh,
so again, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a, you know, so for me, these conversations are very, they're brought up when my children bring it up, but I don't sit down and be like, today we're going to learn about Orientalism and colonization, you know, because my mind is like, right now they live in this world where, you know, there are people who Minecraft and people who don't. There are people who like to create unicorns. Those are the differentiators in their life. Like they're not differentiating between race. And so that's my sort of like take on it in terms of literature. I think to me, before you teach something like this, you yourself have to be really clear.
Dang.
So first, whoa. You know, rather than getting a book about this, maybe the book has to start with your own, you know, your own way of processing this. There's tons of books for adults about race and, you know, helping kids understand race if you're in mixed, you know, race marriages and that sort of thing. So start there before you then try to figure out how to teach it to your kids. Because I think that part will come a lot easier if you yourself understand the conversation that you're comfortable having and with yourself about this topic. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's a
really good answer that, you know,
we're going to...
is. it's almost too good for this segment, you know.
We'll probably edit it out, honestly. We'll cut the whole thing out, beautiful. To be honest with you.
Just yeah. Yeah. Here, statement. Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. I think I agree with you in that, like, I think when there was her kid is 5 and 3. That is so early. Like, let them just live for a little bit. I remember when the nickname and the name calling started for me. It was around when I was like 10. Yeah. But from like 8 to 9-ish when I was living here, there were blissful years, man. Like, we're just playing basketball. Like, I mean, this is like 98, you know, like, yeah. I don't know. I didn't really, I guess I just didn't think anything about race, like, oh, he looks different, but then I look at his parents and I'm like, well, he kind of looks like his parents, so that's cool. Yeah. Like, you know, I think there's something very beautiful about that time of my life that I would want every person of color to experience a little bit, just to have that as a reference to be like, the world can be like that if we could find a way to de-age ourselves and be 9 again, you know? Yeah. So I think that's important. My mismanagement consulting advice would be to just get your kids a Reddit account. And just tell them to subscribe to Asian masculinity, and then just peace out. You know, that's what I would say. That's my mismanagement consulting. Yeah. That's my mismanagement consulting advice.
Suchin, you bring up a good point that there's not really a lot of books about racial ideology, and I would love if there was a book called something like Goldilocks and the Three Radical Anti-Colonial Theorists, but there isn't something like that, not yet. Maybe we should write that. I think that would be cool. My advice is, I want you to call this phone number, okay? I'm going to put it on here. Maybe, whatever, I'm just going to do it. 614-538-0483. And that is the phone number for the Kumon Math and Reading Center in Columbus, Ohio. And you get your kid into Kumon as fast as you can, all right? Because let me tell you this, all right? The whole world, everything's going to try to, you know, confuse them about, you know, oh, you know, you got all sorts of different identities. But I tell you, if you want to be accepted by Asian people, just say I was in Kumon for X amount. That's like ours. That's like saying you were in the Marines. You know, like, oh, when did you serve? Oh man, I was in Kumon, back over in Arlington.
Yeah, you're smoking. 97 and 99. Columbus.
You know, I was doing pre-calc when I was 7. You know, like, that's some Asian shit right there. Yeah. Just think about it, okay? Call that number up. See what they do. This segment brought to you by Kumon. And
they should really sponsor us. That's a great idea.
That would be a great idea.
If a producer, Fawn, if you're listening, please reach out to Kumon. We would love to get sponsored by them. I think that's a great advice. If you want to get accepted, do the Marines of X culture, you know,
and for Asian people, Marines
for whatever, and for white people, I don't know. I don't know what that is. It's maybe,
go join an emo band. Okay.
That's... Yeah.
Don't take life for granted.
Okay. Okay, that was our podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Suchin, thank you for joining us. Can our fans find you and your work and your podcast?
Well, our podcast is at Add to Cart Pod on Instagram. I'm at Suchin Pak on everything else.
Perfect. And you can also find us on the social media, all the channels, platforms, at Asian Not Asian Pod. I'm also on there at The Fumi Abe. That's TheFumiAbe.
And you can find me on Instagram at Nice Pants Bro.
Please consider joining our Patreon. We are going to do a first Zoom hangout next Friday, which is February 12th at 7 p.m. So join our Patreon to get the secret link. And we also have a Zoom stand-up comedy show that we do every other Friday called Hack City. The next one is February 19th. So just go to asian.asianpod.com for tickets. And we got different comedians every time. And Mike and I try new jokes that are not as good as the other comedians' polished jokes. But hey, we still charge you anyways. So please come out and check that out. Was there anything else, Mike?
No,
we good?
I think, Suchin, I'm still in love with you. So, hey, what the you hell? Know, just putting that out there. You know, because it was very formative of me. So, formative time. So, thank you very much for doing our show. Please don't be a stranger. And, you know, we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, absolutely. You guys, this was so much fun. Thank
you. Awesome. We'll see you guys next week.
Bye.